Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Tyler DeVos and Jarrett Steffes, welcome to Startup Stories. Let's start by telling me a little bit about your backgrounds. Tyler, if you can start.
So I'm originally from Northwest Iowa. I grew up with passions of just creating things, I guess, like a lot of kids probably, you know, do. After growing up there, you know, I came down to Central Iowa, to Iowa State, to go to school. I went for management information systems. I liked computers and business, and kind of just thought it was a nice little happy marriage. And while I was there, I got really involved with the startup or the entrepreneur community, I guess, with SciStarters, Startup Factory, Entrepreneur Club, Inactus, which is another entrepreneur club. And that's where I kind of really got my first real taste of like business and what all like the ins and outs of, you know, kind of running your own business, launching a product, taking something, you know, from an idea to actually creating it, to taking it to market. And from there, I created my own barbecue sauce brand and, you know, sold in stores while I was in school and stuff, and grew that, and then left Iowa State to do that full time, and just actually stopped doing that it'll be a year in December. Stopped doing that, and so I really got a background sort of in food, but really just creation of things and entrepreneurship, and so that's me pretty much in a nutshell.
Sounds great. Jared, how about you?
Yeah, so I also grew up in Northwest Iowa. And so I went to Iowa State as well, studying business management. And my plan, you know, I never really kind of thought of myself as an entrepreneur growing up. I always thought I was going to be in business management and, you know, manage a restaurant or something like that. But after my freshman year, I started working a construction job, working from about 7 in the morning to 5 o'clock at night, just completely drained at the end of the day. And I quit after a month. I couldn't do it. And so that was when I was like, okay, I just want to try something online and see what happens. And so I started kind of my whole journey by building an online store called Canyo. And we just kind of outsourced products from China, selling bracelets, anklets, and necklaces. And we quickly grew from, you know, doing $100 a day to doing about $20,000 a month. And so kind of building that brand, I quickly learned, you know, how to check finances, how to do fulfillment, how to build an online store. And so kind of through that process, I learned a lot more just building that own business than I did kind of going to Iowa State a little bit. And so I actually left Iowa State to actually kind of do that full time. And of course, after I think 2 months after I left Iowa State, the business started to go downhill. And so then that's when I was like, uh-oh, what did I do? And so that was kind of a lot of challenges to kind of go through. And then that's when I kind of transitioned to kind of building my own marketing agency. I did a lot of Facebook and digital marketing for companies and built a lot of landing pages and websites for local businesses. And so kind of for the last couple of years, I've really kind of been online, digital, and building brands. And, you know, now we're building Muddy Bites.
Yeah. So did you guys know each other before Muddy Bites?
Yeah. So actually my wife actually graduated with Tyler. So we kind of knew each other through sports. You know, we didn't hang out in high school or anything like that. I think we played basketball against each other a couple of times. Just through my wife is kind of how we knew each other.
And so you guys were each other?
Yeah. Our like towns were kind of close, and the schools that we went to in high school were in the same town. And then I think you're a grade younger than me. But yeah, I knew his wife. And then when he came to Iowa State, you know, his wife went to Iowa State as well. And so we were just kind of intermingled that way, I should say.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, I hear that story over and over. We've had several startups come out of ISU where people just kind of like bump into each other and start building something, and off it goes. So,
So
what's the story behind Muddy Bites? How'd that get going?
So it actually kind of started back in 2018. We originally did not come up with the product. There was a kid that I actually knew online that originally kind of came up with the idea. And I know as he was building it, he kind of kept hitting all these roadblocks. He kept hitting these challenges as he was trying to build it, which, you know, we were learning as we're going too. But there was a point where I actually reached out to him and I asked him if he was looking for partners. And so I originally, you know, wanted to see if he wanted to partner with me. He told me no. I think a month later, I came back to him and I was like, hey, you know, I haven't seen a lot of movement. Would you be interested in selling the brand? And he responded within like 5 minutes saying yes, surprisingly. And so then I knew Tyler had the food background, you know, with his barbecue sauce company. I had no food experience. So, you know, I knew I needed to have that food expertise on board in order to kind of build this brand. Sure. So, you know, I texted Tyler, we hopped on a call, I think within 5 minutes, he immediately told me, yes, he loved the product. He loved the branding. He loved everything to do with it. And that's when I went back and I told, you know, Muddy Bites current owner. And I said, you know, we'll take it. And I think we actually closed on the business within like 3 hours. You know, we moved pretty quick with it because we knew what we could do with it with our team. And we, you know, we built it from there, and that was in 2018, I think it was, Tyler, right? November.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then from that point, it was basically like a year of just failing upwards, trying to develop, you know, I had a food-ish background, but, you know, I had no idea how to, create a cone or how to fill chocolate or really anything to do with chocolate. I think I don't know how many pounds of chocolate we burned, but it was a lot. You know, almost cut my fingers and hand off, you know, trying to cut cones.
I was going to say, there's been some burnt fingers in the process.
Yeah. We burned fingers every day. So it was kind of just a pretty wild ride since then we launched November of 2019. So, in that space right there, it was just developing, the product in any way we could, really.
So real quick, so people have a reference, why don't you just tell me real quick, what is a Muddy Bite?
Oh, it's a bite-sized waffle cone filled with chocolate. Your favorite part of a sundae cone, just a little end with that little piece of chocolate, that's what we make.
So back to the days of the ice cream cone, and it's got a little chocolate in the bottom, and that's right. The best part when you hit that. Okay, great. Right. So besides burning yourselves, tell me more about developing the product. I mean, what kinds of steps did you have to go through? What were you, I get that you didn't know anything about it, but go in a little deeper.
So first I had to figure out, okay, what all goes into it? Pretty simple, right? Just a cone and some chocolate. I looked at, okay, well, can we make the cone? Do they make the cone that small? I found that answer out really fast. The answer was no, they don't make that cone that small. I was like, so next thing was, okay, so how do I make a cone that small? And, or what is the small cone they do make? You know, figuring, just learn about cones and chocolate. I probably did that for, I don't know, 2-3 months of just everything I could get my hands on about cones and chocolate. Figured out, hey, smallest cone they make is about 3 inches. And I was like, okay, well, that's way too big for us. We're going to have to get that down to what we consider bite size, which we thought was about 1.5 inches. And so that's really when the dangerous stuff started happening as far as cutting off fingers, burning stuff. I tried everything. I tried scissors. I just took 3-inch cones. I had scissors. At one point I had a saw, reciprocating saw and a band saw. I built like little contraptions that a cone could fall down and land in the perfect spot. And I had it all set up and then I go to cut it and all the pieces went flying. And so that was one scraped day of trying to build all that only for it to not work. And, so it was a lot of that. Then the chocolate, we just like learning how to temper chocolate, like the most basic thing of actually making this product, you know, it was a giant learning curve. burnt a lot of chocolate. I know Jared remembers coming down and it was so chunky. We had no idea what we were doing. We had like a little ladle that we were trying to fill the cones with. We were getting chocolate everywhere, covered like head to toe in chocolate. It's all over the floor. It's burned. We had it in like a big pot, almost like a gumbo pot. And I mean, it's on the side, it's completely burned. It's like charred black. It smells like normally when you're cooking chocolate or if you do it right, you know, it's smelling good. It's not smelling good at all. And that it was just that for, well, it felt like forever. I do remember there's a couple points where it's like, I'm sitting there. I think Jared might've been with me. I might've been by myself. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing right now? Why am I doing this? Like, I felt like we weren't getting anywhere. And then we really had a breakthrough when we discovered, that, tubing cutters work like really well. Handheld tubing cutters worked really well, to cut it. Jared actually brought one down, to me. And he's like, look how easy this is. He's like, we can just cut.
We were flying at that point.
I know. We're like, whoa. We're like, this is super fast.
So the big breakthrough was a tubing cutter.
Yep. Yeah. So the tubing cutter. And then pipe tubing cutter. Then we had to figure out probably how to make it a little more, you know, food safe, obviously. And so, you know, it's kind of a little custom tube cutter now. But yeah, that was like our huge breakthrough of like, whoa. We're flying through these things, man. That's what we do now. We still do that. That was pretty much our product development ride.
So you buy a long cone, a 3-inch cone, you cut it in half, mm-hmm. basically.
Yep. After we fill the chocolate in it. So I guess I could, that even development process was a little bit of a learning curve too. You know, we used spoon, we used a ladle, we were spilling chocolate everywhere. Kind of a breakthrough in that was discovering actually a quick Google search of chocolate filler. And then there, it was just like a confectionery funnel. And I was like, well, I was like, I should, there's a dirt cheap funnel bought off Amazon. I was like, I mean, why wasn't I doing this months ago? But you know, when you don't know, you don't know what you don't know. Right. So, until you kind of put in that work and do the research, then you can kind of figure it out.
It's really funny because a good friend of mine who started a very successful company said, you know, you don't know how to do it, Google it. And it's, you know, it's kind of silly to say it, but I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs have figured stuff out by starting to Google different things. I've decided that one of my big learnings has been all the different ways to word a search, right? So it's mm-hmm. like, if you get the right words into Google, you'll get what you need. It's just amazing.
Right. So,
Jared, what were you thinking as you watched all this going on? Because it sounds like Tyler took the lead on a little bit. But
well, I was just going to chime in at one point and kind of say, like, when I went, just for reference, our facility's in Ames and I'm up in Spirit Lake, which is about a 3-hour difference. And so I would travel down from time to time just to help with the production side of things. And I remember going down one weekend and helping with kind of, you know, filling them in our early stages where we had chocolate and a little. What was the oven top or whatever it was. And I remember just stirring it for like an hour and the chocolate would not be melting. I got so frustrated with it where Tyler just had to eventually take it over. So, I mean, just kind of our early stages of, you know, building the actual product, it was just so many ups and downs to where, you know, today it seems like it's easy, but, you know, a year ago is like, holy cow, how are we ever going to do this?
Yeah, it's easy because you figured it out after 3 months, right?
Yeah.
And
nobody ever notices all the work that goes into something that then looks easy.
Right. Well, like we get like all the time, we're like, wow, you've really like blown up or like, this is crazy. Like you're selling so much. It's like, yeah, but you weren't there when we were just covered head to toe in chocolate and crap is everywhere. And we have no idea what we're doing. We just burn through a bunch of chocolate. Oh man.
So you mentioned this today, you make your product by hand. Are you planning to automate that? And what would that entail?
Yeah. So that's it's almost like we're starting the whole product development process over again, which is like super fun. I actually like really enjoy it. Like as much as I look back and say, oh man, like that really sucked when, you know, we were trying to first originally develop it. I love it. And, you know, that's what I think what kind of powered us through. But, and so getting to start that whole process over again has been fun. And, you know, it entails actually making the cone, getting a big baking machine to actually make the size cone we need, and then getting an automatic machine to fill it and cool it and spit it out. You know, we do all those things manually now by hand, everything from, you know, making the size cone we need to fill in the chocolate and cooling, like I mentioned, but getting a machine to do all that is a big part in our automation. And then everything down, you know, we do everything down to, you know, stealing the bags and putting them into boxes and shipping them out the door by hand. Those little things, you know, all add up. And with, you know, the help of machinery, you know, thankfully some of that stuff, you know, isn't super custom to us, where, you know, it is pretty common, like sealers, baggers, and stuff like that. So that's pretty much what automation looks like these days.
Yeah. So you guys gained market traction really quick. And maybe you could start by, tech, let's kind of switch it up. COVID hit you just as you were ramping up. So if one of you could just kind of tell the story, how did you begin sales and what happened when the COVID thing hit?
So we actually originally fully launched our online store on November 4th of 2019. And really, you know, what's really nice about Muddy Bites is we gain so much organic traffic just because, you know, it's bite-sized waffle cones filled with chocolate. What can go wrong? And the other thing is it's such an original product that a lot of times people just share it on their own. And so we gain a lot of organic traction very, very quickly through social media channels such as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, even TikTok now, where people just make videos and make posts of the product. And so, you know, quickly from November all the way up until March, you know, we were growing month over month with just strictly our online sales. And we did dab a little bit in the retail space. But when COVID-19 kind of hit back, and I think it was March 19th, we actually had to close our facility because of the Ames and, you know, greater Des Moines area. It was starting to get pretty common up there with the virus. And so, you know, for the safety of number one, having a food product, but number two, all of our staff, we made the difficult decision to actually close our facility. And we ended up closing for nearly 90 days. And actually during this shutdown period, we had our online store open. I think we had like 10, maybe not 10, but like 5 or so warnings labels on our website saying, hey, like, here's what COVID-19 did to our business. We kind of told the story that we had to shut down for safety precautions. And we said that, hey, your orders can be delayed for, we don't even know. It could be a month. It could be 3 months. And so people still ordered. You know, we still did, you know, 25,000 plus online in sales. And so it really kind of helped us stay afloat and really kind of keep the needle pushing forward. And Tyler, if you want to touch back on kind of like when we opened back up and how many staff we had, et cetera.
Well, I was going to touch first on, I still remember just in regards to, gaining traction so quickly, it just always a funny kind of story I think about. So we had three of us, me and then our two first original employees, we still have, in there cutting away, you know, preparing, you know, for a launch or whatever. And we're live for a couple hours and I had my phone notifications on, you know, from our back end, and my phone just kept buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. I'm like, what is going on? So I stepped away. I'm like, dude, we're getting so many orders. Like, what is going on? And Jared like had to redo the site or something. Like it went bad for some. And Jared had like just woken up.
Yeah. The website broke for like 3 or 4 hours and we probably lost thousands of dollars. I remember that. And I actually had to go into the website and refix a couple buttons to make sure it was working again.
And I remember we're about to finish closing up with production on the first day. And Jared is like, all right, guys, I'm signing off for the day. I got to shower and get dressed. He's still in his pajamas, just work. Like he had been just working on the site all day because he was down, like trying to figure out bugs. and stuff like that. And so actually that launch, I mean, it was, we did have those problems. It was a great launch, but that's just kind of funny. Jumping into COVID, it was just so unprecedented. We had no idea, what to do. Our first priority was making sure our employees were safe. And so we shut down immediately until, we got more information. There was just that is kind of, the problem with the whole thing is there was very little information to begin with. And until we knew, further, the precautions that we can take and doing things safely, that's when we, finally decided to open back up.
All right. So Jared, I mean, it sounds like you got a lot of organic traffic, but you obviously had to do some market work to seed that. I mean, nobody just throws a product online and a website and suddenly 5,000 people show up and post about it. So, cool that it's organic, but what did you do to seed the organic?
So a lot of, with the food products, if you can get photos and videos out there, it's going to help kind of tell the story and sell the product. And so we knew we needed to get content out there. So we would take 15 bags, whatever, dump a bunch of bites into a bowl and just start taking photos. And then, we started posting on social media, and that's when people would start tagging their friends and stuff like that. But to get in kind of the digital marketing side of things, we would send free product to influencers that had anywhere from maybe 10,000 followers up to 100,000 followers. And these are typically called like micro influencers, to where they don't have the huge following, 15 million followers, where they're going to charge you an arm and a leg for a post. But with someone with like 15,000 followers, 25,000 followers, they'll take free product any day of the week and just post your product. And so that was kind of our strategy, was send these influencers free product. I remember one of the girls that we sent product to on TikTok, her post went viral, and I think it had over, I want to say, millions of views within a couple of maybe 48 hours.
I got to stop you there. What is it a young lady would do? Because I'm not a TikTok user. I'm obviously, you guys know, I'm way too old for that. But what do you do with a chocolate waffle cone that gets you multiple millions of viewers? Tell me more. Come on.
So the video is honestly pretty simple. It was just literally showing the bag on the camera, turn it around. She would open up the bag, take out the bite, and she would put the phone next to her mouth where you could hear the crunch. And then she would just go, say a word like, "Oh, that was so good," or something like that. And then, with TikTok, you always have kind of the music in the background. So you could just, it's really just kind of a quick little beat. I think it was like a 5 to maybe 7 minute or 5 to 7 second video. Just showing the bag, hearing the crunch, and that was it. So it's sending free product for a 7 second video that got millions of views. You can't beat that.
Wow.
So it was just kind of using that method over and over again. We use a lot of UGC, which stands for user generated content, which is where we just send the product to influencers. They make their own video. We don't say, "Hey, you got to do a video this certain way." We want them to kind of do it their own way. So that way it feels organic. To create that user-generated content. And then when they do that, we would use that videos on Facebook and Instagram ads, even some email marketing.
I will say there was one TikTok where a guy put them under his heels, like they were heels. And like there was a popular sound on TikTok. It's like walk a mile in my Louis Vuittons or something like that. And he was just stepping on the ground with them. Yeah. And it got like hundreds of thousands of views. Or like, I don't get this. How does this happen? Just kind of the weird, dumb ideas.
Yeah. I'm not sure I get it either, but great for you guys. Right. I mean, if it got you that much traction, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get into how you sell. You sell online, but you have all other channels you sell through. What are those?
Yeah, so we strictly just mainly sell online. I'll let Tyler kind of talk about the retail side of things here in a second. But yeah, we originally launched with just kind of online. We knew we'd have better margins online. So that's where we kind of started when we fully launched our online store on November 4th of 2019. And so that's where we've been at. Then Tyler, if you want to kind of touch on the retail side of things, because that's an entire story on its own.
Yeah. So we figured, okay, hey, if people like it buying online, it takes them you know, however long to get it, you know, for shipping. What if they saw it on a shelf? Are they going to like it the same? You know, it's pretty spontaneous, you know, online when you see something online and you go to buy something, you're like, oh, just click on it because it's easy. You know, are they going to like it as much when it's next to, you know, 1,000 different snacks? You know, they may like a different snack. We didn't know. And so we tested and we had been getting interest from retailers and we just didn't know how it worked. So we tested it with a couple of retailers, 7-Eleven and Hy-Vee, the one was like 70 locations, 7-Eleven was like 70 or 80 locations and Hy-Vee was about 100 locations. And it sold like crazy. We didn't run any ads. I think we made a couple posts about it on our Facebook and that was it, of just like letting people know that it was there. Cause we would get comments of like, hey, where can we get this in the stores? And so we would just tell them. But other than that, you know, we didn't really tell anybody that it was there and it sold like crazy. People just saw it and were like, oh, this looks good next to all these other things. And so we figured we had something there and they actually wanted us to expand, but you know, because we're making everything by hand, we were just unable. We're like, oh, we can't do this. Fortunately for us and like how new the product is and how different it is from anything else, you know, we kept a good relationship with them and they'll gladly have us back any day. But yeah, we dabbled in it a little bit, you know, to get a feel for it. And then now it goes back to the automated machinery of, you know, we're trying to re-gear up, in a sense, so that we can launch nationwide retail.
Yeah. You know, I can't tell you how many people are out there trying to get a product to get anybody to pick it up off the shelf and you guys put one out there and it just runs away on you. So congratulations for that, because that is really hard to do.
Thank you.
Yeah, honestly, and I had kind of known, and I thought, you know, with my own product I had done before, I was like, okay, you know, we're going to have to, if we go into retail, you know, they're going to want to put a bunch of marketing dollars in and, you know, to make sure it sells. And I did my best. I remember when we had a meeting with Hy-Vee and, you know, he was going me through the whole spiel, which I kind of knew he was going to stay. I'd kind of been through that whole kind of process before. And, you know, at one point it just got to, it's like, you know, look, we're a young, really young company. We don't have the dollars to be putting, you know, in the market. It's like, you know, if it sells, it sells, you know, if it doesn't, it doesn't, you know, whatever. We just kind of left it at that. And I think we got an email back like a couple of days later. He's like, I will take 100 cases and we'll ship it out and I'll email some of the buyers out in the field and see if they pick it up. And they did. Mm-hmm. It just kind of, again, it goes back to like the organic thing of, you know, people just liked it. And we kind of got lucky in that sense, I guess I'd say.
Well, I think you make your luck. I mean, obviously you spent 3 months burning yourself and trying to cut your hand off. So I think you earned
it. Right.
So yeah. You basically you're at that interesting place that a lot of startups get to, is that you can produce manually, but you need to ramp up to where you can produce in high volume. And that's not a simple thing, as I know you both have found out. And that leads me to the next question. You're getting ready. This is how I met you guys, is you're getting ready to raise around capital and mm-hmm. are going through the process of figuring out how much do I need? You know, how do we build this thing or do we buy it? So kind of give me a sense of what that's been like for you guys to get ready to raise capital.
Yeah, I'll go first here, Tyler. So for me, at least, I know Tyler will agree too, is it's taken a lot longer than we ever expected. We knew it, you know, it wouldn't happen overnight. But it's been an entire process coming up with every little aspect of trying to raise capital, even from looking at a 3-year financial outlook and, you know, just little, you know, documents of like, what's the marketing strategy? What's the retail strategy? What's the, you know, all these different strategies to make sure that, you know, when we do have an investor on board, that we're putting their money to good use and that they're going to get their ROI back. And so kind of going through that entire process has just been an absolute journey because, you know, obviously we've never done it before. And so, you know, it's been challenging, but it's been a lot of fun. And I know for me, I've learned a tremendous a lot just even with speaking with these high level investors, you know? So it's been a journey.
And like everyone we've talked to, you know, in the journey preparing us, you know, you, Everyone else we've worked with and kind of brought on board to help us, they've pushed us. They've made us think about things that we wouldn't otherwise think about. You know, asked us questions, made us think critically. I can really appreciate that. I know it's frustrated the heck out of Jared and I at some times. You're like, gosh, I feel like Absolutely. We just talked about this and this is taking so long. Like, why are we spending one day just on, you know, this little minute thing, going over one line item, you know, on a pro forma document. It's like, why are we doing this? And then, you know, as we've gotten further down the road, we totally understand, like, oh wow, like if we didn't do that, we would be totally screwed right now, you know, talking to someone. It's been fun, frustrating. We kind of knew that going in, that it maybe frustrate us and take us a little longer. You always kind of expect that, but at the end of the day, you know, we both love what we do, and so we can appreciate that and keep moving forward, and it doesn't get us too down.
Yeah, and you're still operating. I mean, you're back up and running. You're selling your product online.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. And by the way, for now that we've made all the listeners hungry, muddybites.com, Muddy Bites, and they got a nice website, and it works great now, by the way. So Jared's got all the bugs fixed. So
there you go.
It won't crash on you. Handmade chocolate, right? There you go. So I think, you know, it's interesting to see. I've gotten to work with you through Raising the Capital, and I think a lot of your comments are hit right on. Is a lot of people just don't understand what it takes to go out and ask people for, you know, 7-digit money. Hey, I need a million. I need 2 million. I need 5 million. And there's an entrepreneur here in the area, Gabe Glenn, that I don't know if you guys know him, but with Make You Safe, and they just raised another round. But I remember him saying one time that his one round took him 2 years and I think over 200 airplane flights to finish raising that round. And I say that not to dissuade people, but just understand this is not easy and you do have to put a lot of data together. And I think you guys have done a good job. I've actually gotten to see their presentation. And I know a little bit about the financials and all that. We won't get into that here, but you guys have done the work and that's important. So, well, with that, we want to encourage everybody to go buy Muddy Bites. Is there anything you guys like to say before we tie this off?
No, I will just say one last quick note on the capital raise. It's kind of fun, you know, when you talk about, you know, how long the process is and that stuff, it's kind of funny. It's almost like a running joke with Jared and I now. At the beginning of every week, we talk about, okay, you know, this is the week, you know, we have our meetings or whatever set up. We're like, okay, you know, this is the week. This is it. Well, someone's going to write us a check this week. Then we'll get to Friday and none of it happened. You know, if someone wants, you know, to meet again, or they need to, you know, ponder it a little more, whatever it is the case, or we just got filed told, you know, no, not my cup of tea. We sit out at the end of the week. We're like, okay, you're back at it next week. We'll get them again. We'll get them again. It became almost a running joke now, but yeah, any advice I'd have to give, you know, to future entrepreneurs trying to raise money, just be patient, and just stick with it and, you know, listen to smart people like Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say right on to exactly what Tyler said. It definitely helps when you have, you know, people like Mike and, you know, a company that can help you do it, because if you're just doing it on your own, it's going to take you a lot longer than you think.
Well, I will do a shameless plug. We do a Raising Capital seminar frequently at the Greater Wine Partnership, and we have one coming up in October. And for those of you who don't know, you can go to the Greater Wine Partnership website and just search Raising Capital Seminar and you'll find it. But I want to thank you both so much for taking the time today. I'm glad you didn't cut anything off, Tyler. I'm glad the burns weren't permanent like that. But I really was, you know, congratulations to you both on the amount of progress you've made. It's pretty amazing. It really is. And I think you guys got a strong future ahead of you. So with that, thank you very much for being on Startup Stories.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.